Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz today.
It is plantation capitalism to have someone paying 40, 50, 60% of their salary towards rent.
I'm sorry. At that moment, I'm just out of the conversation altogether. Plantation capitalism. That's Congressman Jamal Bowman. He represents the District of Fire Alarms. And he's telling me how we need a Green New Deal for public housing. By starting with that, he doesn't know what he's saying, but he ain't done.
That is plantation capitalism. Rent should be capped at 20% of someone's salary. That's where we need to take it. And as we rebuild our cities and as we rebuild our country to ensure that every single person has a home, we need to invest and pass the Green New Deal for public housing.
Oh, these commies are not kidding around. Rent should be capped at 20% of someone's salary? How does that figure? Because in New York, everything's too expensive? Move. That's the way it works. It's expensive because it's popular. It's expensive because people want to live there. That's supply and demand. Can't afford to live there? Move. Well, that's not fair. What's fair got to do with it? Again, anytime they're talking about fairness, they're talking about being benevolent dictators. They're never so happy as when they're telling you what rent should be capped at. And by the way, 20%? 20%? Why not 19%? Why not 14%? Why not 10%? Why not 6%? You're the landlord. Best of luck. Tony Katz today. 833-468-8669. 833-GOT-TONY. That's the number. We need a Green New Deal for public housing? I don't even know what this means.
Right. It deals with the issue of unemployment and underemployment. It deals with the issue of the climate catastrophe that we are living in, and it deals with the issue of lack of affordable housing in our country. As the senator said, win, win, win.
So what is your plan? Give everybody a house? What is your plan? Tell landlords what they can charge? What is your plan? When the landlords abandon the buildings because there's nobody to buy the building because real estate all of a sudden goes in the you-know-what because you have decided that rent control is a feature that should be everywhere, who's now going to fix the plumbing? Who's going to fix the plumbing? These progressives never, ever have a plan for what it is their horrors are going to bring. They only have more ways to blame others for not doing things that they demand. If they were able to get away with this and they watched the impending disaster because they were trying to manipulate markets, they would make the claim that somewhere in the deepest recesses of name someone's town's basement, there's a group of Republicans fighting against them. And only when those Republicans are gone will we actually be able to make our plan work. But their plans don't work. No, that's not true of all their plans. Some of their plans have worked. Let's be clear. DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, worked. They've been working on this for years, and it became the conversation du jour post-George Floyd, and they were already in. They were already doing it. You just became aware of it then, like I did. And like me, you said, I'm sorry, what the hell is this? This equity. This is nuts. You don't mean diversity and inclusion when it comes to thought. You mean it all about your racial animus. You mean it all about skin color. You don't mean it about the mind. And you want to use this as a tool to denigrate other people, attack other people. Then they brought in Ibram Kendi and they brought in Robin DiAngelo. Anti-racist. See, it's not enough not to be racist, which is, of course, what we strive for in terms of not having biases, etc. But you have to be actively working against it. Well, how do I know if I'm actively working against it? We'll tell you. Who's we? Well, we is anybody we decide is the we at any given moment. We'll tell you if you're being, you know, actively anti-racist. And if not, well, then you see, that's because you're secretly racist. You see, it's your bias. Well, I don't. Wait, I'm not racist. See, you can't handle the conversation. Let's move it over to Robin DiAngelo now, who wrote White Fragility to explain. And by the way, she's a white woman. You see, you can't even handle the reality that you're a racist. So you ask questions and you start to deny. You're like, wait a second, how does this work? That's called white fragility. You can't handle the reality that you're a bigot. And then there are people who say, here, we'll have dinner. We'll charge you thousands of dollars and we'll have dinner with you. And we'll tell you throughout the dinner why you're such a terrible white person. All of this can be attributed to the DEI insanity. And it is insanity. It is terrible. It is hateful. It is bigoted. It is the worst of concepts. Pushing out the worst of ideas. DEI helps to create in a concrete way this belief that there is the oppressed and there is the oppressor. And everything is viewed in that lens. And it doesn't matter where you are. It doesn't matter what you're doing. Everything can be connected to bigotry somehow. That's the concept of intersectionality. Millions of dollars being paid on college campuses and other places for DEI officials. This and that and the other DEI hiring was a way for college campuses to say, hey, no, we're good people. You know, don't call us racist. Look at all the DEI people we have. We're doing it right. Just like when people wrote checks to Black Lives Matter post George Floyd, they didn't actually care. I say this without any hesitation. They couldn't give a good holy damn about black lives. What they were doing was buying their freedom. The groups would come and say, write us a check. Otherwise, there'll be protests. And the group said, here's a check. See, we're good people. Please don't hurt us. That's what happened. And after seeing what has happened and seeing what DEI is, a great number of people have said, yeah, this is terrible. We can't have this. Let's fight against this with everything in us. Alabama has signed legislation that prohibits public schools and universities from maintaining or funding diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. The law is SB 129. Requires public universities to, and I'm quoting, designate restrooms on the basis of biological sex. Alabama says that's, quote, the physical condition of being male or female, as stated on the individual's original birth certificate, and not the gender that aligns with how a person identifies. So first to the bathroom conversation, I think this is the right thing to do. But there can be plenty of unisex bathrooms. Right? Single-use bathrooms? Don't have any issue with that. I don't care who goes into one of those. It's fine by me. The argument is that men who want to change in front of women and who want to change in front of children, those people are perverts. And we should say so very loudly. I'm trying to follow this Planet Fitness story. Producer Carl, have you followed this?
No.
All right, so let me see if I've got this right. There was at a Planet Fitness, there was a woman who goes into a locker room. A woman. And in the locker room, in that locker room, is a man who claims to be a woman. In the women's locker room. And so the woman, who's actually a woman, took a picture of it. And she's like, what is going on here? Well, Planet Fitness actually revoked the membership of the woman who took the picture and did not do anything regarding the man who claims to be a woman in the woman's locker room. Our gender identity non-discrimination policy states that members and guests may use the gym facilities that best align with their sincere, self-reported gender identity. The member who posted on social media violated our mobile device policy that prohibits taking photos of individuals in the locker room, which resulted in their membership being terminated. That's America in 2024. You see how backwards that is? That's DEI. That is this progressive, nay, Marxist bigotry. The twisting and perverting of rational thought as a way of bringing down culture and society. I mean, the Black Lives Matter people that, and you know the companies that wrote the check, look how good I am, look how kind I am, literally had on their website that they want to do away with the nuclear family. They want to destroy the nuclear family. You wrote those people a check? Damn. Now, if Planet Fitness wants to have a third locker room that says whatever, they're more than welcome to do so. But it's a women's locker room, and it's meant for women, not meant for men. And the term is pervert. Now, listen to me carefully. I am not saying that you can't live your life the way you see fit. I do not make an argument to adults making decisions, even if I disagree with them, even if I think they're damaging. But your decision is not a decision for somebody else. And this is where Planet Fitness is out of their damn mind. Of course they're wrong. They're in every way wrong. And we should be clear, their policy doesn't make them decent or good. Their policy makes them hateful and awful. Women are not men and men are not women. And if you are a man who claims to be a woman, you can make whatever claim you choose. I cannot stop you from making a claim or engaging in a mode of dress or anything else. But we can stop you from going in the women's locker room because that's a bridge too far. You made a decision. It doesn't mean that other people have to accept your decision. I don't accept your decision. I don't get to stop you from living your life. But I think you can be stopped from going into a women's locker room. I think you can be stopped from going into a women's bathroom. I think you can be stopped from being next to young women, children, and changing. I think you can be stopped by near any means. That's how dangerous I think it is. That's how despicable I think it is. And the terminology I utilized was perverted because, or pervert because it is a perversion. To want to be naked in front of children. To want to engage in the exhibitionism in front of the opposite sex is what is. Alabama says no to the DEI, and they are right. And good. And I only hope more take this lead. I want more people to go about recognizing that DEI teaches horrific levels of bigotry. It protects bigotry, and it has no value and doesn't belong anywhere in our lives. Sadly, you see cities that put together DEI officers, states that have DEI officers. Huge mistake. Should immediately be dismantled. Immediately. Because it isn't about understanding one another. It isn't about creating a better society. It's about division. It's about division, and we shouldn't be a society that's about division. We shouldn't look at division as a value. We shouldn't. Now, there's a lot that goes into this because we could go into 100 different categories. Like, for example, when people say, our strength is our diversity. No, it's not. Our strength is not our diversity. Our strength is a commonality in a value system that binds us. And things like DEI and things like the trans political movement shred those values. Oh, of course I can prove it. More than happy. I've already done so in many days. I'm more than happy to do so in the future. I'm Tony Katz, and this is Tony Katz Today. The Dow is up 311. The NASDAQ is up 66. Reddit, they went public today. Tony Katz today, what's going on? RDDT, $34 a share. They raised about $750 million from the offering. Could explain the good day. Tony Katz today. What's going on, everybody? This was the story I was surprised by. I want to see if there's acceptance. The House Speaker, Mike Johnson, is going to invite Benjamin Netanyahu to address a joint session of Congress. It's going to be interesting. That is going to be interesting. Because as I stated earlier, Netanyahu is not loved. Remember, all politics are local. Don't view politics in Israel or anywhere through the view of how we see it. How do they see it? So they see in Netanyahu as a guy who has been indicted. They think in many ways he is a criminal, and that he and his wife have engaged in some shady actions, that he puts together coalitions. Because remember, it's not our system. They've got very, very strange systems there. And what they create are coalition governments. So you have these 120 seats in the Knesset. You have these elections. And then these groups come together to create power. And then, you know, your party got the most votes. And then you're the leader of that party. And then this party. And then this party got 3 seats. And this party got 8 seats. And you come together to control over 60 seats and have control of the Knesset. And then the person in the party with the largest amount of people is the prime minister. But you have to make all the people in your coalition happy. Otherwise, they're like, nope, we've lost faith. And then, oh, you don't have a majority. Okay, I guess it's time for a new election. They're having elections in Israel like it's their job. Well, he has within his orbit some people and some groups, man, that many Israelis don't like. Either too hard line, or it's a religious issue in terms of the ultra-Orthodox who don't believe they have to serve in the military, and Netanyahu wants to allow them to not serve, and other people are like, what is this nonsense? There's a lot of drama swirling around Netanyahu. But while this war is happening, the Israelis are not interested in changing anything. They're interested in the destruction of Hamas and Hezbollah. So an invitation is one thing. Acceptance is something different. And I don't know why it is that Netanyahu wouldn't accept. What is interesting is that Benny Gantz, who is known as Minister Without Profile, he came to speak to Kamala Harris. And Netanyahu was like, I'm the prime minister. You don't get to have this conversation. And Benny Gantz was like, yeah, I'm having this conversation. So Netanyahu was like, well, you're not doing it through these offices. So Gantz had to do it on his own. And that created a level of division. I don't know if he would accept. And I think there'd be a fair amount of Democrats who wouldn't show up. And also, I don't even know if it's helpful. I'm not so sure. But let the invitation come forth and let's see what happens. Find it all at TonyKatz.com. This is Tony Katz Today.
President Biden and I continue to urge Congress to act so that the United States plays its part in the global minimum tax deal, which is currently being implemented in jurisdictions around the world to end the race to the bottom in corporate taxation. We've also proposed implementing a billionaire minimum tax so that the top 0.01% pay their fair share.
Just so we can engage a bit of translation, allow me to help the Republican Party translate the Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen into language America can understand. Hey, Black Americans, now that you're making money and saving money and leaving money to younger generations, these rich white folk want to totally screw you over. What? What is that? That's not the way we talk in America? I thought I saw a memo. That's the way we talk. Oh, no, that's the way MSNBC talks in America. Oh, okay. My mistake. I'll try it differently. There are going to be Black Americans who, for the first generation, first time in their lives, have money to leave to their as a legacy. And look at all the taxes that this Biden administration, these progressives, want to come up with to tax your ability to provide something better for your children and for your grandchildren. I personally find it disgusting. Oh, and by the way, if you're not Black, they're going to do that to you too. Again, still find it disgusting. Tony Katz today, what is going down, my people? 833-468-8669. 833-GOT-TONY. Billionaire minimum tax.
Raising the tax on corporate stock buybacks to encourage businesses to reinvest profits in their workers and grow their companies. And closing estate and gift tax loopholes that allow wealthy Americans to pay less than they would otherwise owe. We will also continue to oppose misguided proposals that will grow the deficit by offering large tax breaks to the wealthy and big corporations. As a whole, the budget will enable us to continue to grow our economy and support workers and families while upholding our commitment to fiscal responsibility and reducing the deficit. I'll be happy to take your questions.
Question number one, why when you speak does it look like you're part of a hostage video? Who in the Democratic Party is holding a family member and won't release them until you make this statement? This nonsense amount of talking point that comes from the political left. Fair share? If you have a Treasury Secretary talking about fair share, they clearly can't understand how an economy works. Then again, this is the same Treasury Secretary that told us that inflation was transitory and 3 years later said, yeah, you didn't know transitory meant at least 3 years? My gosh, it's like you didn't even go to school or something. Well, we didn't realize that, you know, people wouldn't understand what transitory meant. This is really a lot of hate from the administration, but it's really an ideological conversation. The ideology states that you should not be able to keep what's yours. The ideology really states that we, the progressive left, as they see it, know best. You don't know what to do with your money. We know what to do with your money. We are the kind ones. We are the decent ones. We are the good ones. We are the important ones. We are the valuable ones. We are the ones who will save you because we are the ones tapped with the secret knowledge. And let us pat you on the head and tell you what's best for you, and you'll thank us. That's the argument. Fair share is it brings about the idea, it's the only thing it could do, that somebody knows what's fair. You don't. They'll use the term greedy, and you know I don't believe in greed at all. I don't think there's any such thing as greed. They will call you this and that and the other, but they know what's fair. You don't. You're terrible. They do. How does that work? How could they possibly know what is fair? Isn't fair subjective? Isn't that what fair is? The idea of that's fair is my benevolence. If I have two children and I give them each ice cream. I have a certain portion of ice cream, and I want them to be able to each have some ice cream, and I split it down the middle to the best of my ability. Well, that's fair. But what if I have a plot of ice cream? A plot. I don't know if that's how we describe ice cream. I've got ice cream, and I give one kid all the ice cream, and the other kid I don't give any ice cream. Well, that's not fair. Unless, of course, it turns out that one of the kids is lactose intolerant, so therefore I wouldn't give them ice cream. Fairness is solely in the eye of the beholder and has no place in any level of policy. Notice that when we have we don't have a fairness system, we have a justice system. These are two different things. Fairness, that's about emotion. And I don't want these emotional people deciding what money they can take from me. That is barbaric. And I know I'll be told I'm dehumanizing people by saying they're animals. Well, good gosh, let's call it something, shall we? Disgusting, despicable, ignorant, foolhardy, radical, gross, despicable. Did I say despicable? I'll say it again. Deplorable. Perhaps in a basket. This is the person who's going to be in charge of monetary policy in the U.S. Janet Yellen is a fool. Janet Yellen is a fool, but is proud of it and gets all sorts of support for it, because if you think they're done with just that, oh, you don't know these people.
I agree with you. Under current law, some of the wealthiest Americans pay very little tax because they receive their income as capital gains, and those capital gains aren't taxed until realized and may escape income taxation entirely at death. So the president's budget would impose a minimum tax of 25% on total income, inclusive of unrealized capital gains.
You haven't made a move to make the money, and they're taxing you. And if you'll notice, she is upset that it's possible you can get away with not paying taxes at all. This is, if you ever questioned why it is you don't agree with the political left, right? Many people, they're not hard and set. They're, you know, in terms of their politics, they're learning things, they're listening to things, they're trying things out, going through arguments. We make a mistake that we were like, no, this is the only way it is. And I never think about anything else. I think you should think about other things. You can realize, as I have, that those things are wrong. You know, the whole fairness conversation is the conversation about communism. What else could fairness be? From each according to their measure, to each according to their need. That's Marx, right? That's the Communist Manifesto. From each according to their measure, to each according to their need. Meaning that we decided that you have enough so we can take X because we know what's best. And we've decided you only have this so you get Y because we know what's best. How is that not, to someone, a barbaric concept? And how is that not the same exact conversation as fair share? Because only in that level of, it would be subjective, right? Only in that level of subjective could you decide, well, we're taking 25% here, 12% there, 18% there. And listen to how Janet Yellen describes this. These terrible people think they can get away with not paying taxes. What? Because they died, they don't owe? Who do they think they are? I mean, why would I ever want to be a part of that? And I would ask you the question, why would you ever want to be a part of that? But check out how proud they are of it. Check out how proud they are of Biden's budget. As Speaker Mike Johnson points out, You want to talk about a tax increase?
There's two completely different worldviews on this. You know, the Biden budget came out. It would make the largest tax increases in U.S. history, about $4.9 trillion in tax increases. It would raise the debt to about $52 trillion over the next 10 years. We can't go down that road. We're going to crash the U.S. economy. We all recognize that. So what we present is the alternative view, and that is our House Budget Committee passed their resolution here in the last couple of weeks, and it would balance the federal budget in 10 years and cut $15 trillion in spending while not affecting Social Security or Medicare. This is possible to do, but it takes very tough political choices, and you got to limit the size and scope of the federal government. What a concept. We've been talking about that for a long time. There is a path to do it.
There isn't a path to do it. You don't have control of the Senate. You don't have enough control in the House. So hold on a second, Speaker Johnson. There isn't a path to do it. I want it. I'm desperate for it. But let's be clear, there isn't a path to do it. We've got a White House right now that wants to say that tax cuts are irresponsible because they will explode deficits. Sorry, I got a little choked up right there. Tax cuts are irresponsible because they will explode deficits. Deficit is what happens year on year. You take in $1 million, you spend $1.2 million, you have to borrow $200,000, deficit. The $200,000 goes to the debt. The next year, it's the same thing. You have a $200,000 deficit. Now the debt is $200,000 plus $200,000 is $400,000. These people never talk about debt. They only talk about the idea of deficit reduction, not what we need, which is deficit elimination, which is to say you live within your means. You don't spend more money than you have. As a matter of fact, you spend less than you have, and then you pay down debt. Because paying down debt would then allow you to get to something called a surplus, and now you're into savings. Well, now we're having a Hayek conversation versus a Keynesian conversation. I get that. But we're if anybody is looking at their own bank accounts, utilize that as the tool. And I don't claim an economic expertise. I claim to be able to, I would hope, pretty well establish a philosophy. Do you feel better when you have savings or when you have debt? Are you in a better situation when you have savings or when you have debt? Now, I could hear some people say, well, Tony, there is some good debt out there. Absolutely true. Absolutely true. If you have a house, let's say you have a mortgage, I think there'd be very few people who would tell you that that is bad debt. Right, we'd have to look at the type of house you have, the neighborhood that it's in, how much you spent on it, how much you put down, all those kinds of things, what kind of job you have to be able to pay off the mortgage or at least make timely mortgage payments, etc. But in the main, people would say that's a fine bit of debt to have. The argument that I make is not one of having no debt in your personal life, but in government life. Where is the debt valuable? I'm not arguing that there may be situations where the debt is necessary. Wartime situation might very well be necessary to go out there and borrow and lend so you're able to, I don't know, survive. But that's not what we're doing right now. What we have is years and years upon decades of radical bloat with no interest in cutting, because if you cut, well, you hate children, or you hate this, or you hate that, or you're a racist, or you're a bigot, and nobody has had the strength to say, would you all just shut it already? We can't live like this. And their answer is, the political left's answer is, oh, we can, we certainly can. If some people would just pay their fair share. See how that comes around? See how that connects? So this Janet Yellen conversation is much more than just about poor fiscal policy, as I've been discussing. She sounds like she's reading in a hostage video, because these are the talking points of the progressives who have no problem with debt. And we should be clear, Trump spent like a drunken sailor. I mean, he did. Debt is our issue. And the answer to debt is not to take a look at people who have more money than you and say, you have to pay more. If you took all the money from the richest people in America, you still couldn't pay down the debt. So clearly, aggressive taxation on some is not the answer. We have a spending problem. And until people like Janet Yellen will honestly address it, sorry, Speaker Johnson, we're not going to get anything in line. The country just doesn't seem interested in doing it. I'm Tony Katz, and this is Tony Katz Today. So I've got reservations for Gordon Ramsay's place tonight in Vegas at Harrah's. And then I've got reservations for Hugo's Cellar, which is on Fremont Street, old school New York style steakhouse with guys who are way out of shape and ill-fitting tuxedos making salads right by the table. Oh, can't wait. And then I think we have a reservation for Giada's place on Saturday. I'm there for three nights, and I think I've got a total of like five reservations already set. Oh, daddy's going to eat good. Tony Katz today, heading out to Vegas, a couple hours, for the Premium Cigar Association trade show. So I'll have a lot of video coming from that, a lot of conversations. Very interested in how that business world is going, because they had a huge boom. Cigars, massive boom during COVID. Well, that's over. That is over. There have been a lot of price increases in the world of cigars, and not just because of tobacco. The boxes, the cellophane, the marketing, the packaging, all of that has been causing a scene. And people have less discretionary income. So are these guys ready for what is looking to be a questionable and very problematic 2024? In the meantime, I'm going to do what I can for the economy, and I'm going to eat like it's my job. Find everything at TonyKatz.com. I'm going to have myself some safe travels, I certainly hope. Tomorrow, everyone, take care.